This is Hearing Voices from NPR with Shades of Gray, an hour-long audio mosaic produced and scored by Jonathan Mitchell, co-produced and narrated by Ari Golden.
The following program contains sensitive material. Please use listener discretion. On January 22, 1973, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a landmark decision in the case of Roe v. Wade. It allowed unlimited access to abortion during a woman's first trimester of pregnancy, while giving states the ability to regulate abortions that take place in the second and third trimesters. The conclusion held that a woman's right to an abortion falls within the right to privacy, protected by the 14th Amendment.
I never even had such a hard time telling friends, and I always thought that it would change their whole opinions of me.
This is Shades of Gray, an hour-long audio mosaic of people's dilemmas and the many truths inside this conflict.
She was pretty young. She was really responsible. She was really sad because she didn't want to be in the situation that she was.
The doctor came out and he said, "I hate to tell you this, but..."
And looking in the mirror and thinking, "You blew it. She, this is it."
Failed her method of birth control.
I remember it. I remember it. You told me, like, in bed, right? In the morning. I was sleeping. You came down after going to the bathroom.
She...
You told me.
Did not have the lifestyle that she felt was appropriate to raise a child.
Never take another life.
Take some responsibility.
Who would I be if...
That was a gray. That was just a weird gray little episode we had.
Do you know when a child falls? Child falls. Do you know when a child falls? A child falls down. A child that's learning to walk. If they've hurt themselves, they'll cry, but normally they just get up and get up and a child that's learning to walk will just get up and try again and fall down and be laughing and smiling and get up and get up and try again.
Having a child is not just like anything else in the world.
We have a sense of what's perfect and we're trying to aspire to it.
I want to be married, I want to enjoy.
We're in a constant effort to be that which we espouse.
Could I have had more money, maybe had...
We get caught up in shame and pride. We get caught up in what will other people think.
I think that I might be pregnant. I just feel really awful and stupid and irresponsible. I mean, this just happened out of the blue, and it was with someone that I, you know, that I'm just dating. I don't even really, maybe we're not in a really committed relationship just yet.
I had sex with this guy on my parents' bed while they were out of town. And
he told me to trust him, so I did.
I think he left. He had to go to work, and I jumped in the shower. And I remember taking that shower and thinking, something just happened here. I think something happened here really big, and I'm really scared. And I don't know what to do. And I pray, and I hope, and I will do anything that you ask, but please don't make me pregnant. God, no.
I don't know. I'm not always safe. I'm definitely kind of stupid in that in that regard sometimes.
Do you know how babies are made?
I was definitely irresponsible, but I don't think any more than you were.
He's a good guy. I mean, I'm sure he'd stand by me, whatever I do.
Stupid joke my friend told, I think, actually. No, it was a book my mom got me called, Where Did I Come From? It was all about where babies came from, and it was really, really graphic.
Expressing yourself physically to a woman with your spirit.
I don't want to lose my virginity until I'm married.
I just gotta say, no, you ain't getting nothing.
Once one exits the household environment and they're in college, that's when you can start.
It's a free country.
They can do whatever they want.
Having sex with a few people, you know, not too many, not too little, but have sex with a few people, get your experience, and then get married. Like, that seems like the American little thing, you know?
If the pill isn't taken every single day at the exact same time, it has a failure rate of 9%.
Even really responsible women, if they fail once, that's enough to get them pregnant.
A kid is a big responsibility.
Condoms break.
Whenever I think of someone being pregnant, I always think of Alien, you know, the movie where the thing pops out of its stomach. Like, it's just kind of weird to have a whole other thing living inside you. It's kind of like a parasite. It really is. Don't give me that look.
I don't feel right. I want to feel like the way I felt before.
I told my sister that I just had the flu. And she drove me home, and I pretended to be happy, and, you know, like, oh, you know, that's it. And I just faked it, and I didn't tell anybody that I was pregnant, except my boyfriend, and that was it.
Scared. And, like, kind of angry. Not really at anyone or anything, just it.
There's so much, like, guilt.
I remember, yeah, it was not a positive emotion.
That's built around it.
That's for sure.
That
you're the only person going through it. And you're really resentful that no one else is.
You really feel like keeping it a secret.
But she's pregnant. She's really pregnant. Oh my God, who am I? What is happening? I was just going right, and now all of a sudden I'm being forced to left, and I can't go straight, and I don't know what to do.
Who are you? What do you believe in? How do you live your values? What are your values? And what do they mean in the world?
Where you are now, I've been. It took me years to get to where I'm at now. I've had 7 abortions. I have 3 kids. Take the time. Think about your decision. Weigh out your pros and cons. Having a child is not an easy chore.
My life is such a mess right now that... I mean, there are so many things that I even have to fix with my own life, and I know that...
You're very different from the next woman. Every woman that walks in here is very different. Every woman has a different pain in their heart.
My family, I am kind of on my own, and I won't really have anybody to help me.
Being a woman is hard. Men will never have a period like we do. They'll never cramp, and they won't push your baby out. Never. They'll never understand what it's like when you find out you're pregnant, you have something inside of you, and you get attached. That's being a woman. They think you can just go and get the abortion and it's over and done with. That's not how it works. You do what's best for you. It has to be right here. If it's not right in your heart, don't do it. You're welcome, honey. I've been where you're at. I'm a safe woman. You're safe with me. I wouldn't do anything that I wouldn't do to myself. Okay?
There truly is a sense that we can have, and I think if we all draw on our own experience, we can see this, where we feel safe to be who we are and to hold the views that we have.
You know, the times that I've talked to people about having an abortion, it's interesting because you don't always know what someone thinks about abortion. You don't know how they're going to take it when you tell them that you've been through one or that you've experienced one with somebody.
I never even had such a hard time telling friends, and I always thought that it would change their whole opinions of me.
That life is not yours. It's from God.
This is steeped in very, very deep value systems.
This whole issue feels like some sort of awful, paradoxical problem that a philosophy professor cooks up to make his students crazy.
People who are on either side of that,
each side
are in,
is
pretty well
based on,
from their perspective, a non-negotiable place.
Deep, utterly clear moral truth. And more than just moral truth, defense of people who need defending.
What happens, though, is the unwillingness to respect the values of the other side, the choice at some deep level not to do that.
What does this young woman really want? What's troubling her?
the difficulties of many people's lives are so great that it's often hard to make choices other than the choices for survival.
It is a strong woman who can decide on her own what is best for her. Not what's best for the man, not what's best for society, but what's best for her.
The counselor said, "Have you thought about your options?" And I said, "Yes."
When she decides what is best for her, she should go with her heart.
And she said, "Well, you know, what are they?" And I said, "I'm going to have an abortion." And she said, "Okay."
41 Women's Health.
Buena Vista.
Jack Woman's Health.
Dr. Hanson's office.
Hi, is there someone I can talk to about just some questions I have about abortion?
Okay, what did you need to know?
You may ask me questions.
How long does an abortion take?
Well, how far along are you?
If a woman is very early in pregnancy, usually under 59 days from her last menstrual period, she can be offered a medical abortion, which means she would take a medication of some kind or another to cause her to abort. RU-486 or methotrexate are the commonest. If she is not interested in that or beyond 59 days, then she would be offered a surgical abortion.
Well, how far along are you?
About 11 weeks.
The actual surgery takes about 5 minutes.
The actual procedure takes 3 to 5 minutes. She needs a plan to be with us for approximately 3 to 5 hours.
Maybe 5 or 6 hours altogether. You're going to be here for 4 hours. Counseling, meeting with doctors, having ultrasound.
Lab work, ultrasound, talking to a counselor.
Filling up medical forms.
Fill out papers.
There's a lot of paperwork. Signing consent forms and recovery time.
Recovery time, some people can spend up to an hour.
In about an hour in recovery.
A surgical abortion is a technique where typically a plastic tube is placed into the uterus after dilating the cervix to make room for the plastic tube and using suction to remove the products of conception, the pregnancy, from the uterine cavity.
Does it hurt?
It's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. We use a local anesthetic.
Usually the only thing you feel is like severe menstrual cramps.
Mild to moderate cramping.
But we do have a sedation if you think you might need it. Most people don't.
And the further the pregnancy is along, you need to dilate the cervix more and put in a larger tube in order for them to actually fit into that plastic tube and come out with the safe and appropriate amount of suction that can be applied.
We just do the vacuum aspiration.
It's like a small tube, and then it's connected to a suction.
There's like a suction machine that suctions the fetus and everything out.
And as you get beyond 14 and 15 weeks, there is no tube that is large enough to evacuate all of the products of conception. Then you begin to use other instruments to remove the fetal and placental tissues. So now you are doing a D&E where you actually are extracting portions of the fetus separately. I don't think you'll be able to, in any state, legally do them beyond 28 weeks, and it's probably extremely unusual for them to be done beyond 23 or 24 weeks. Typically now, in most states, once the fetus is potentially viable under current guidelines for treatment of neonates, most states would not be, or hospitals, comfortable with that procedure, even with significant fetal anomalies sometimes.
How much does it cost?
Well, we do an ultrasound, so if the pregnancy is under 7 weeks, then the cost would be $445. But if it's between 7 and 11 weeks, then it would go to $370.
Up to 12 weeks, it's going to be $370. Well, we have general anesthesia where you can get put to sleep if you want, and it's going to be an extra $150.
It's $345 if you want to be awake, or it's $420 if you want to be sedated.
It will be $350 to be awake, and $525 for you to be asleep.
Where are you located?
We're in Minneapolis.
We're in Fort Wayne.
Downtown Milwaukee.
We're located in Newport.
Raleigh, North Carolina. You would just basically need to make an appointment.
And if you have any other questions, you just give me a call.
And it's just like, you know that there's like a person that's crying more and more each day.
I was feeling nauseous. I was feeling bloated. My lower back hurt.
With me, I started lactating.
My breasts were super tender.
Any little twinge of nausea reminded me of... I saw so many pregnant women, babies and women, and so many. I just thought, what are they doing to me? I had baby on the brain.
Look at the water. Katrina Taylor? Stop
it. Yeah, of course, you remember the lobby, too.
It's a very uncomfortable place, you know, and you're kind of looking around at each other, and there's just every walks of life, you know, from the punk rocker to the, like, yuppie with her, you know, guy with greasy hair.
Just a total, you know, dumbass reading Sports Illustrated while his girlfriend's, like, freaking out.
The teenage kids with the guy, you know, sitting on the couch playing his hand video game while she's in there having, you know, some crazy life-changing event.
Trinidad, Eva.
And then the gentleman who did the procedure.
I guess in my career, I performed maybe in the range of 1,000 to 2,000 abortions. I mean, abortion is not even the majority of what I do. But, I mean, you know, like anything, any work that you do with repetition, it becomes work and just another procedure that we do.
You have to look at that person and find out really where it's coming from, what's going on in their life.
Usually women know what they want. I mean, it's fairly rare that someone comes in and they're really undecided. They may say they're undecided, but in fact, fairly readily say that they actually want to terminate the pregnancy.
I try to treat everyone like I like to get treated, and it comes back to me.
So she's been counseled in another room. Her options, what the procedure is. She's given some antibiotics to take afterwards to prevent an infection, as well as some pain medication. And then she comes in this room.
I'm really glad that I went in with you.
And undresses from the waist down. There's another chair here for a family member, a friend, if she wants to bring someone. Or
it was like that doctor wasn't even there
during the procedure.
You know, I almost don't even remember what the person looked like.
It's done under local anesthesia, so they won't be asleep during the procedure. We clean the vagina and cervix with some antiseptic solution. We give an injection of some numbing medicine in the cervix. There's a little cramp when we give that. We wait for that to take effect, and then we open up the cervix a little bit with the dilators, and there's some cramping involved with that. And then this is the suction machine. There's another canister here, and there's a tube that comes out of here. And then the procedure itself usually takes a minute or so.
But I just remember the air in that room. It wasn't like stiff or you know stale, but it was fresh, but it wasn't moving.
We put a small tube in through the cervix into the uterus.
I remember holding you.
It was kind of an intense cramp, because even with the local anesthesia, it's impossible to numb the entire uterus, so there still will be some cramping.
Unpleasant, gross, barbaric.
Scraping and sucking.
The tube and the sound.
And then we remove the instruments from the vagina. We take the specimen to another room and examine it to make sure that we got all the specimen. All of the specimens are sent to pathology and where they're examined and they're disposed of as medical waste, which I believe involves incineration.
You should think of some type of birth control method. It is so important.
You know, of course, there is another aspect to this. And, you know, I always do kind of, in a way, have a moment's thought of thinking of the end of this fetus. Not in that I think of this as a life, necessarily, but it's a loss.
I was lying down in the recovery room, and the nurse came up to me. She said, "Do you want me to have anybody, the person that you came with, come in, talk to you?" I said, "Oh, yeah, I really, really would love that. Could you do that?" "Sure, what's his name?"
"I would only want to have one if he was here with me."
"The perfect man for me." So about 5 minutes later, she comes back to me and she said, "There is nobody answering to that name."
I don't know what happened.
You must be wrong. What's his name again?
I'm a sucker for beauty, I think. I really think I am a sucker for beauty, and he's just like so damn beautiful, and he just has this graceful way of just...
"They're out for a good time. They don't want to pay the price."
"One woman came and got an abortion. Her old man was down there talking to another woman while she was up here getting done. She walked down there and caught him."
"I am alone."
"You can't guarantee that every man is going to stick with you."
His fear or his discomfort or his...
"They love to copulate and be done with it and go on to the next one."
Ego or his macho or his...
"Are you going to take care of these kids till they're 18, 21, sometime longer?"
Because he has a choice to be out of the picture or not.
The ability to just make love and have sex and not be thinking about it was gone. That was it. No more. And the rest of our relationship, it was puny.
My boyfriend was there and he did hold my hand, but I was so mad at him because I wanted him to feel like the amount of pain that I went through.
No matter what he did, she still was not satisfied because there was just so much.
I'm really glad that I went in with you.
If they do really care for you, they will sense your boundaries of respect.
I can never say that I went through as much as you did with it, but...
I am alone, and if no one's going to tell me to go on birth control and nobody's going to tell me abortion, it's all about me taking care of me.
Shades of Grey will return in a moment.
The second half of Shades of Grey, produced by Jonathan Mitchell and Ari Golden, coming up in a minute on Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
This is Hearing Voices with Shades of Grey, produced and scored by Jonathan Mitchell, co-produced and narrated by Ari Golden.
The following program contains sensitive material. Please use listener discretion.
You listen to Shades of Grey.
You listen to Shades of Grey.
Shades of Grey.
I feel like abortions is evil. I feel that.
No, we're going to make this choice for you. It drives me totally crazy.
If you read the Bible, you know what I'm talking about.
Just because I'm into freedom of choice.
Never supposed to take a life. Never take another life.
Especially with your own body. What you need to do for yourself is what you need to do.
That's taking a life. That's like taking a gun and putting it to somebody's head. Boom. Abortions.
I took a pregnancy test yesterday, and I wasn't pregnant. But if I was, I would probably get an abortion, probably.
I mean, I can barely take care of myself, so I don't think I could take care of a whole nother person.
I don't want to have kids.
I couldn't take care of a kid.
I'm so not ready.
Like, I know I couldn't, and it would just...
This is the deal. There are a lot of people that get married young, that have kids young, and they work it out.
We lived a crazy life.
Those years were tough.
Having a mom that had me when she was 16.
It's beyond anything that I've ever accomplished.
I don't know what kind of parents those people turn out to be.
Who would I be if I didn't have them?
The people that maybe should have been alone longer.
The idea of having this sort of unconditional love from this little person sounded really good to me.
She was 16.
And this was pre Roe versus Wade. My boyfriend and I were discussing what we were going to do. And he was telling me all kinds of horrible things that I can't even repeat. Knitting needles, jumping on a trampoline. He even made suggestions about sleeping with other people so I could blame it on other people. I remember the day I got married. I was 5 months pregnant. I had a lump in my throat that was so big, but I felt I have to do this. Then I had the baby, and he was working, and I was staying home with the baby.
He treated my mom like crap.
And then there were all kinds of issues about him seeing some other woman who was like 14 or something.
I think he's just a small crumb of a man.
But when we split up, which was just inevitable, and I was going to be alone, oh my God, what am I going to do? I don't think there's ever been a moment in my life where I've been so... I can't even say it was fear. It was just like I was looking through this sort of black hole, like where there was no direction, no nothing. There was just like nothing. There was like no answer. I went on welfare.
And it was hard because you're a little kid and you need some guidance and you have a teenage mom who has no idea what she's doing.
The lack of stability.
Come on, kids. We gotta go.
You know, you just get a group of friends and a school you liked and...
pack up the car, get the cat, we're out.
Oh, we're headed to, you know...
boyfriends and strings of losers.
Having to watch my mom go through, like, some really horrible relationships.
I hate that guy to this day.
Just all types of, you know, abuse and...
He was way creepy. He was like this...
just like moving from one kind of bad situation to the next.
Get up, dust yourself off. Come on, kids. We gotta go.
My mom.
She was the one thing.
My mom
was always there.
She was constant.
Sometimes they have to go through really hard things.
I got us evicted from every apartment we were living in. You don't love me.
And leave you and reject you.
You never wanted me.
And they'll come back. And
she never left us.
And you're still there for them.
No matter how bad it was.
That's going to mean a lot.
No matter how bad it was. No matter how bad it was.
And today, we have like this amazing sisterhood. I mean, she's my mom. There's no question. Like, I could never just call my mom by her name. I don't get that when people do that. I don't get it. But
it was always the three of us.
You have dreams and goals in your life.
Knowing my mom today, I think I would wish for her everything that she went through.
And I want you to think about who you are and who you want to become.
Because she is amazing. And it's because of everything that she went through and we went through that makes her the person that she is. And I feel like I wouldn't say, oh, well, because of us, she couldn't accomplish certain things, because she's about to get her PhD and she's awesome. And so she's still done everything.
That was a tough road to hoe. I mean, it was just really hard. It's really hard for me to think about living my life without them. But there were times when I would sort of fantasize, and I guess I do still sometimes, fantasize about who would I be if...
I can't. I just can't. I want to finish school. I want to go ahead with my life. I had all these plans that really didn't include children until I was much older.
I had a friend in high school that got pregnant right around the same time I did.
My best friend.
And she...
did some research, and we went out to see this doctor.
And this was pre Roe versus Wade.
The guy opened the door and he smelled from liquor, and he had just stains all over his clothes. It was disgusting. The place was really dirty. And he said, you know, okay, get up on this table. He had an examining room. And my friend said, don't get up on the table. You know, she did not want me to go through with it. I was feeling so depressed because we'd had such a hard time finding anybody. And I thought, oh, let's just do this. And she looked around, she said, they're rusty instruments.
The doctors and nurses on Sunday morning would wait at the glass doors of the hospital, and the taxicabs would drive up, and women would get out collapsing. Botched abortions.
You got her medical card and all that?
And these doctors and nurses would run. Then they could deal with them. They would bring them in completely. The innards were just horrible situations or tremendous infections. And, you know, he is this young, idealistic doctor, said, I'm trained to do this. I could do this.
Then somebody said, I heard of a doctor in Washington, D.C., who does abortions for the daughters of politicians and also the girlfriends of politicians, of married politicians. So I called this guy, and you had to go through this whole code to get him. It was amazing. You had to call and say, hello, I'm asking, I'm looking for Wilson. And they set up a time to meet me at the airport in Washington and put me in this, in the back of a limousine and blindfolded me. And he did take me to this clinic. In about half an hour, the doctor came out and he examined me. He was really very, very nice. And he said, I hate to tell you this, but you're past your first trimester, and I can't help you. This was it. You know, I'd borrowed money from friends, scraped together whatever I could. I just didn't know what to do, and he obviously felt sorry for me. And he went and made some phone calls. And he came back and he said, we're taking you to the train station, and we're having you go to Baltimore, where there's a nurse who will do the abortion for you because she can do it after the first trimester. Baltimore. I got to the train station in Baltimore and, you know, I wasn't looking for anybody because they were supposed to find me. And after everybody got off the train and I was still there, and then this woman came up and said, follow me. She didn't say anything else, just follow me. So I followed her, and we walked for about 6 or 8 blocks to this dilapidated brownstone. And the woman who opened the door was, she was holding a bottle of Canadian Club, and I just remember thinking, oh, God, here we go again. And she just said, come on in, and said, get up on the table. I mean, no kind of prelude, nothing. Just get up on the table, take off your underwear and get up on the table. And I did, and I said, well, what are you going to do? And she just said, I'm going to put this in you. It turns out she inserted a rubber catheter into my uterus. There was nothing sterile about this place. I mean, there was no sterile sheet on the table. She didn't wear any kind of gloves. And the woman said, you just stay here and I'll come back later. And she locked me in the room. There was nothing in that room except for the bed and a mattress with no sheet on it or anything. Just this mattress, this bloodstained mattress. And I kept thinking, well, how, when is this going to happen? I had no idea. She explained nothing to me. And Saturday seemed endless. And then Saturday afternoon, I started to have real sharp pains. And then I realized that they were contractions. And it went on all Saturday night into Sunday morning. And then finally, Sunday about midday, when I thought, at that time I really did think I was going to die because I was bleeding. and the pain was excruciating, and I heard screams, and I wondered, who's screaming? I honestly didn't realize until later that those screams were coming from me.
Abortion is a practice that goes back to antiquity, and there are many different methods. People have thrown themselves, punched themselves as ways to try to induce a miscarriage, taken medicines and drugs, ingesting something. In early America, there developed a trade. People would go through town selling various things, and including medicines and including the kinds of medicines that were thought to bring on the menses, bring on a miscarriage. Female trouble, come to this person, order these pills. Your period's late, order this medicine. People were able to buy those, and they actually called that taking the trade. Sometimes the medicines were so strong they would take too much, would actually poison the woman herself and kill her. 17th century, 18th century, early 19th century, you always have some women self-inducing, but it becomes increasingly something that only women with the fewest resources resort to. The preferred method really is to go to somebody else. In the mid-1800s, there actually developed kind of an open business of abortion clinics where physicians and others performed operations to induce a miscarriage. In fact, they were pretty openly available in the 1910s, 20s, and very open in the 1930s. By the 1930s, there were open clinics where they saw 7 to 10 women a day and performed abortions openly. The physicians had business cards, and those were passed around, and people knew exactly where to go. After World War II and the 1950s, it really does become much more difficult to find. It is not like the 1930s. There have been raids on those clinics. A lot of those places were being shut down in the 1940s and 1950s. In the 1950s and 60s is when some of the things start happening that we tend to associate with illegal abortion, where women are blindfolded, driven around in circles to some unknown person, unknown place.
The woman came in and said, get dressed and get out of here. And I was so weak. I really had trouble standing. I can't move. I just need to sleep for a little bit. And she said, you've got to get out of here now. I got out of the house, and I was walking along, and this cab driver stopped, and he said, what are you doing in this neighborhood? He said, it is not safe for you to be here. Get in here. I said, I have to go home. I have to get to the airport in Washington, and I have to get home.
Surgical abortion now is actually the safest surgical procedure available in the United States.
I would say it's very dangerous for your immortal soul.
Oh no, it you know, you get the religion in there, and you know, and there's a lot of like,
you have a lot of women who are dealing with, not only are they dealing with the mental and the physical, but they're dealing with the religious too.
That life is not yours. It's from God.
And I'm afraid of feeling guilty that, you know, I destroyed a life that could have been something really great, you know?
I've had 7 abortions, I have 3 kids. It's never over and done with, because we live with the decisions that we make for the rest of our lives.
I would probably get an abortion.
One of my friends had 2 abortions.
The sex ed classes I had at my school gave you a card of a place that gives free abortions.
My job is to make whatever decision that you make comfortable for you.
People have regrets about killing their children.
I definitely did feel that.
And it can come...
That it...
Years later,
took something away from you.
You deal with your own demons in your own way when it is your time.
Like, you need to know what you're getting into. You need to know how real it is.
I mean, you know, after all, what is there a stronger human relationship than a mother for her child?
That little spirit had been waiting, and it saw an opportunity, and boom.
I don't just believe, I know that we as human beings can rise above the smallness and the pettiness. We can rise above the things that divide us. And we often don't.
Because abortion is evil. When somebody ought to stand up and say it's evil.
We're priming ourselves to respond, so we stop listening.
I mean, you know, we're humans, we're not animals.
And we're just waiting to get in there.
We're not barnyard animals. We're, you know.
The other is not a monster. The other is a human being like me, who holds deeply held values that happen to be different from mine. I don't like them. They're not ever going to be my values, but I can respect that person for who he or she is.
I work at a couple different Planned Parenthoods, and one that I went to last week, there are some protesters who are always outside.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
The young woman I was working with said, yeah, they're always there. They're really nice. They just come in, we say hi, and we know each other at this point. And there's just, you know, they're just there.
Just to pray.
I can pray.
And we'll give out literature to the women coming by.
And I can vote.
And some take it, some don't.
And I can engage in my free speech.
God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Sometimes we even pray for a baby that's been aborted. By name, we call out the name of a baby. Just any name, really.
And most of the times, they try to avert even your look.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Sometimes I feel like it would be really nice to just feel so sure about things, you know?
The system of abortion provision that we developed in this country is one that people thought in the late 60s and early 70s was going to be beneficial to women, and that I would argue turned out being a real problem. And that is the freestanding abortion clinic model. They created a clear set of targets for people who wanted to protest.
We used to do this at the old Green Eye Hospital. That was an abortion mill. For years there, we were doing this there. And they'd have goons out there. And they came over and actually assault you.
We tend to demonize that other who's the enemy. And that's where you get the phrases like baby eaters and cockroaches and all the things that people do to dehumanize the enemy.
They just don't like us. They just don't want to be. Maybe they just don't want to be reminded. Maybe a lot of these women come by and have had abortions and do not want to be reminded. And we get yelled at and screamed at, you know, or what about this and what about that.
I've been attacked right here. As a matter of fact, there was a guy down the street there just a few minutes ago, this big, big, fat guy with the beard and the dog. He assaulted me here, well, 2 years ago. He grabbed my sign, and it broke, and he fell on his backside. And it was rather amusing because he's semi-invalid. He's a very, very violent man, but he fell on his back, and he couldn't right himself. I went over to give him a hand after he had attacked me. And he cursed me. He wouldn't have it. He wouldn't let me give him a hand to help him up. And he was like a turtle on a shell.
My values against yours.
I think that one of the criticisms that pro-life people make of the media generally is often true.
We are stereotyped as being some sort of violent right-wing group.
The amount of ink that is given to people who commit violence as opposed to the amount of ink that is given to people who are horrified by the violence and yet also are deeply opposed to abortion. Now, I speak as a reporter. I understand that a person who fires a shotgun is a better news story than somebody who's stuffing envelopes. I get that. But the aggregate is of a very sort of demonized on both sides.
That's the media, isn't it? They don't like us.
So they really come out and look what's going on. They wouldn't believe all that nonsense about how violent we are.
We're trying to focus on our prayer rather than let this all these things distract us.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
But it doesn't work to be adversarial. It doesn't work to demonize and stereotype the other. That actually the way that we get on best with our family and friends and co-workers is by problem solving, is by dancing with the issues.
My personal belief, based on having looked at a lot of polls and talked to an awful lot of people, is that if there is a single majority view in this country, it probably comes closest to an old sardonic pro-choice joke that used to go around when the polls were sort of at their height, the abortion polls, which is that most people believe in the three great exceptions for abortion in this country. Number one, rape and incest. Number two, really deformed fetus. Number three, me.
That fear, that initial gut-wrenching thing.
Most Americans
became true.
Want to make sure it's there for themselves, their daughter, their sister.
But I felt scared about being one of those people who have an abortion.
They don't particularly like the number of abortions that go on. They certainly don't like being confronted with the detail of what abortion is. Most Americans in most polling situations can't stand abortion after about the 11th or 12th week.
The second trimester abortion is different because the infant has now formed calcified bones and...
The second trimester abortion problem is that the docs have got to remove physically discrete, identifiable parts of fetuses, pretty much no matter how you do it.
There was a lady that had severe heart disease, and she was on a lot of medicines to control her blood pressure and blood flow through her heart. Having a child could very easily have killed her. And it was a second trimester fetus.
There are not very many doctors who will do second trimester abortions, and far fewer doctors who will do late second try abortions.
So I went into the operating room, and we have a sonogram in the room, and one person is in charge of manning the sonogram. So the transducer is on the mom's belly, so you can see calcified structures. So skull, rib cage, arms and legs, and that kind of thing.
Doctors learn to look at very gruesome things. It is the nature, particularly, of being a surgeon.
You break the bag of water, and the umbilical cord gets kinked, and the infant dies pretty quickly, so that the procedure is being done on, a dead fetus. I reached in with the forceps, and the sonogram was on one of the limbs. I believe it was the arm. And so I pulled and I pulled and put it in the dish, and he moved the sonogram over, and the heart was still beating.
Thing number one makes my stomach hurt a lot, and thing number two does not. Okay, if that's my problem, is that a reason for me to say to this woman, no, you can't have an abortion, you have to have the baby?
There aren't that many people that know how to do second trimester abortions.
Do I believe that the presence of the foot in the surgical pan indicates a soul?
And I'm still... If I get a patient, if it comes up that this mom is in grave danger for either carrying the pregnancy or going through labor and asks me to do this procedure, I will. Because I know how.
Most of us who get pregnant or have a loved one who gets pregnant,
blood tests, peeing in cups,
at 14 weeks, do not describe it as
probing
an inanimate thing that could get sucked out by
tools and
a vacuum without much concern.
White lights and...
Having a child is not just like anything else in the world.
Because there really is no other circumstance,
table and stirrups,
in which something goes from not being a human being to being a human being, and this process takes place inside the body of someone else.
A physical
in contact with your body.
Attachment.
It just doesn't exist anywhere else.
Still present in the room with the experience, but removed enough not to be drowning in a pool of pain and disgust. Vacuum and...
The notion that
tissue and
the bearing of children could be diminished in this way.
And then just kind of high velocity, like spiraling, spirit swirling havocly all about in this little room, up this tunnel that led from the center of the building, sucked out and up, up into the sky, up into the sky.
Whatever you're feeling, whatever it may be.
It was just very bizarre, discomforting feeling.
Be true to those feelings.
Real crying. The real tears and crying that are so foreign to my system.
Do you end up feeling as though you made a tough choice that maybe you made the right way and maybe you didn't?
Yet here we are.
Or do you end up thinking that you killed something?
It's the choice to make life or not make life. But it was so in my body, you know, that there it was and there I was. And
I want to be able to go in and do this.
A parent.
Without being forced.
A parent.
To go crazy thinking about.
Its existence was so apparent.
The ethical consequences of it.
And the moment that it was separated from my body, from my space, I knew that it was a real thing.
25 or 30 years of people persuading you that these were babies.
That little spirit had been waiting.
That made you feel.
I definitely did feel that.
That there's baby souls out there.
That it,
that you somehow got rid of.
Took something away from you.
Shades of Grey was produced by Jonathan Mitchell and Ari Birnbaum, with an original music score by Jonathan Mitchell. Our speakers included Susan Cullen Marks, Executive Vice President of Search for Common Ground, and Cynthia Gorney, author of Articles of Faith, A Frontline History of the Abortion Wars. Support for Shades of Grey comes from this station and Public Radio International stations nationwide, and is made possible in part by the PRI Program Fund, whose contributors include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, with additional support from Beta Project and the Carver Foundation.
To bring them to a place where they don't agree with each other, but where they can respect each other for their deeply held values. Because that's one of the things they have in common.
From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.